This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, in for Juan Williams. We still await a ruling by the Florida Supreme Court and the counting of overseas absentee ballots, but it looks as if Florida will be able to announce a winner of the presidential election sometime tomorrow, possibly by noon. Earlier today, a circuit court judge issued a ruling that effectively makes the recounts underway in Broward and Palm Beach counties moot. Unless that opinion is overturned, Republican George W. Bush will carry a 300-vote lead into the tally of about 2,500 overseas absentee ballots. The best guess is that the overseas vote will add to Bush's lead, and that Florida's 25 electoral votes will put the Republican nominee over the top. Our guest this hour is Green Party presidential candidate Ralph Nader. If you have questions about his campaign, the future of the Green Party in particular, and third parties in general, about what some say was his role as a spoiler, or about the challenge to the two-party system, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Before we go to Ralph Nader, though, we want to get the latest from Florida. Joining us now from Fort Lauderdale is NPR's David Wellna, who's been following the vote recount in Broward County. And David, thanks for joining us. What's up now with the recount in Broward?
Well, Neil, the latest development is that a state judge in Fort Lauderdale just denied a petition by the Republican, by four Republican voters here, to have a trial which would stop effectively the recount that's underway here. This has been denied, and it was sort of an 11th hour attempt by Republicans to halt a process that seems to be yielding votes for Al Gore, not that many votes, but it is yielding votes. And because the judge has thrown the case out, it's not clear what the next move might be here.
So has the count resumed? Is it stopped? What's going on?
The recount is underway. It's been going on since this morning. The state judge is ruling this morning in Tallahassee, upholding effectively the Secretary of State's vow not to recognize the results of this recount. Had apparently no effect on the recount here. The canvassing board authorities in Broward County say that they are following the guidance of the Florida Supreme Court, which yesterday said to keep counting. And they say that until they hear otherwise from the Supreme Court, that is precisely what they're going to do. They had counted about 110 precincts by early afternoon of 609. They're still saying that they hope to finish this recount by late Monday afternoon. However, they say because there have been various attempts by Republicans to bring the canvassing board officials into court, the count could lag behind because of that, though the counting has to stop when those officials are not present. Mm.
Well, as you noted, a judge in Tallahassee, Judge Terry Lewis, the circuit court judge, ruled today that the Florida Secretary of State does not have to include the results of these recounts. I wonder what was the reaction there in Broward. Did sort of the air leave the room when that was announced down there?
No, it didn't, because the feeling among the people backing the recount was that this is only a circuit judge who made this ruling. They felt that they had the blessing of Florida Supreme Court to go ahead. And in any case, this is the kind of ruling that would be appealed to a district court and then ultimately to the Supreme Court. And there's a certain confidence on the part of Democrats here that this Supreme Court would view their position favorably insofar as the seven justices on that court were all proposed by Democratic governors of Florida. Mm-hmm. They feel that is a friendly court to their cause, and that's where they would like to see this issue settled.
I wonder, though, and you may not have an answer to this, are they confident that the additional votes you say Al Gore is picking up in the course of the recount, are there going to be enough of them to overtake the 300-vote lead that George Bush already enjoys in Florida, not to mention any more he might pick up by the absentee ballots?
Well, clearly the Democrats in Broward County have not had the deluge of new votes for Al Gore that they were hoping would appear with this recount. They had picked up three dozen more votes for Al Gore by early afternoon with the 110 precincts or so. Now, I guess if you multiply that by about six, you would come up with close to 200 more votes from this county if that trend were to continue. And, of course, in Palm Beach County, there are also many other votes that could surface for Gore. The big question, I think, is really how many votes George W. Bush might pick up from the absentee ballots, which have to be counted by midnight tonight. And that's a real wild card right now. There are Democrats who say that especially Palm Beach County could come up with enough new votes for Gore to outweigh any favorable results in the absentee ballots for Bush. But we're going to have to wait and see what happens with those ballots to see if that's true.
So the philosopher at the moment is Yogi Berra. It ain't over till it's over.
That's exactly right. And in fact, we never know from 1 hour to the next, in fact, where things stand with this recount, with this election. This is something nobody has ever seen, nobody alive has ever seen before, and there seems to be no clear resolution to this at this point. The big question is what's going to happen if they keep counting, and there's been a final tally released tomorrow. If that recount shows that Al Gore got more votes in Florida, it's going to be a very difficult situation to resolve.
Thanks very much.
And thank you, Neil.
NPR reporter David Wellness speaking to us from Fort Lauderdale in Florida. Now let us reintroduce our guest, the Green Party presidential candidate Ralph Nader. Welcome back to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
The stated goal of the Green Party in this race was to claim 5% of the national vote. That would qualify the party for federal matching funds 4 years from now. It looks as if the total received is about 3%. Given that result, what do you think you achieved in this race?
Well, we didn't get the 5% to get federal matching funds, but that's a convenience, not a necessity. We now are the third largest political party in the country, the fastest growing. We've replaced the Reform Party, and I think we are going to be a swing party in many decisions here in Washington in terms of the margins. Poll after poll historically have shown that the American people, even if they don't vote for a third party, want a viable third party to keep the other two parties honest. Well, that's what they got in this election.
There has been an analysis of this election which suggests that it came out the way it did because the right wing of the Republican Party towed the line and did not vote for Pat Buchanan, while the left wing of the Democratic Party did not tow the line and to some degree, voted for you. Do you disagree with that analysis?
I think it's overblown. I think the best figures I've seen is that out of every 100 votes for the Nader-Leduc candidacy, 30 were new voters, non-voters or young voters. And then the remaining was split 2-1 Democrat. So it's not that overwhelming. I think far more decisive in terms of the outcome was inability of Al Gore to landslide what was really a weak Republican candidate with a rather bad record in Texas. And when Al Gore couldn't take his home state of Tennessee, even his former congressional district, I think that illustrated that this was not one of Al Gore's best campaigns.
During the race, you kept saying that these two parties were much closer to each other than they ought to be, and were not giving the American people a real decision. Do you see that there is no difference between these two candidates on the environmental issues that were perhaps dearest to Green Party voters?
I said there are a few major differences, but the similarities about the structure of concentrated power in corporate hands that control so much of our government departments and agencies and Congress, the similarities tower over the differences. But it's interesting that in the last week, Neil, Senator Moynihan, Roger Simon of U.S. News World Report, and Holmes Jenkins, the conservative columnist for the Wall Street Journal, all came to the conclusion that the reason why this election was so close was because the candidates were so similar to one another.
But one of those areas of distinction, would you agree, would be environmental policy?
Yes. I mean, I would give Gore a D+ and Bush a D-, but I think they both flunk. You know, Gore talks very effusively about environment, but if you take it industry by industry, the motor vehicle industry, the biotech industry, the herbicide, pesticide industry, WTO NAFTA, which by all environmental group standards were anti-environment, and many others, he was really as bad as any Republican. Like, not a single proposal to improve fuel efficiency in 8 years by the Clinton-Gore administration. You can't do worse than that. A total holiday to the biotech industry, no regulatory framework to speak of. You can't do any better, worse than that if you're a Republican.
Yet, on a host of other issues, I think that they would find people like the Sierra Club enthusiastically endorsing Al Gore.
Yes, I think it's a different expectation level. I think they are so willing to settle for so little that they look at Al Gore, and they have filled my ear for years about the Clinton-Gore administration's flubbing and not standing up for environmental issues. They just look at Gore as being better than Bush, but not very good.
No, people are eager to talk to you, and let's go to the phones. First caller is Tim, who's on the line with us from Seattle. I'm trying to get Tim. Well, maybe we can't get Tim. Let's go instead to Bob, who's on the line from Portland, Oregon.
Good afternoon, Neil.
Good afternoon.
And good afternoon, Ralph.
Yes.
I'd like to first comment to Ralph, I'd like to say thanks for running the campaign. I've been a longtime Green. I was one of the founders of the Green Party of California, ran for Congress in 1994. The question that I would like to ask Ralph, and this is something that the media is always bringing up, is saying we didn't get the 5%. Well, there's another issue that's probably even a lot more important, is how many states did the Greens pick up in terms of getting a permanent ballot status? Going into this campaign, it was roughly about 12 states. And in the year 2002, it was going to be a very important year because there are going to be 38 state houses up for re-election, and that's one of the ways we can qualify. And I'd like to know if Ralph knows any information about the number of additional states we picked up in terms of actually getting a permanent ballot line.
Well, I know at least 28 states. Rhode Island, for example, went over the top when it didn't in 1996. But we haven't had a full tally. But I think you're right in saying that in the year 2002, there are going to be far more local and state Green candidates moving into slots, challenging the two parties. And I think that's going to be the way the Green Party is going to grow. And we're encouraging people who want to run for these offices, the city council office or the Board of Education in the local area or the state legislature, to contact us at votenator.com. And send us the resumes, and we'll get back to you. I think that's going to be the strength of the Green Party.
So the party building efforts were going along many lines, not just the national 5% figure.
Exactly, and the campus Greens are just coming alive. It's so wonderful to watch them. I was at St. Thomas College, University, Minneapolis, Colgate, and Skidmore this week, and I've never seen such audiences of young people really wanting to commit themselves to progressive political efforts, very concrete about where they want this country to go and where they want this world to go. I think that's one of the benefits of the Green Party candidacy of Nader LaDuc.
Thanks again, Ralph.
Thank you.
Bob, thanks for your call. Did you hear about the effort late in the campaign for computer vote swapping that
yes.
Some people in states that were closely divided between Gore and Bush were swapping votes? They would not vote for Nader in their state if somebody else in another state where it wasn't so close would pick up their mantle for them?
Yes, and in some states that's illegal. In other states it is legal. There's no way to judge how many votes were swapped, and furthermore, no way to judge whether both sides kept their promise. But, you know, I think we're going to see, unfortunately, I don't particularly like that because I like people to vote their conscience and vote for who they really like to be elected. We're going to see more of that in the year 2002.
Technology takes us to strange places.
That's right.
We're talking with Ralph Nader, and we're taking your calls at 1-800-989-TALK, 1-800-989-8255. To send us email, our address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. It's Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. Those of you tuning in to hear Science Friday, we should remind you that Ira Flatow and friends have been put on hold for a week until we finish our coverage of the late-breaking developments from Florida and the continued unsettled status of the presidential election. Our guest this hour is Green Party presidential candidate Ralph Nader. We're talking about the role he played in the post-election limbo we find ourselves in, the future of the Green Party, and what lies ahead for the consumer activist himself. To join the discussion, give us a call at 1-800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And our next caller is David, who's on the line from Washington, D.C.
Hi. This narrow margin between Bush and Gore was not the most astounding thing about this election. I think the most significant phenomenon was the great liberal sellout. And early on in this election process, union leaders, environmental group leaders, and so-called liberal editorial writers, they listened to the polls and they took their influence and they started going for Gore right away, even though, Ralph Nader, you were the only one to be against the death penalty, the only one that wanted to take tax money away from the industrial military complex rather than add to it.
Is your point that the Democrats weren't perhaps real Democrats?
It's more than that. I'm talking about the leaders of organizations around the country who just came out and dumped on Nader. And then the Washington Post, it claims to be a liberal paper, when Ralph Nader came to the University of District of Columbia, the next day in the paper it only had one sentence on a back page about all that he had said here when he came to Washington, D.C. to give his platform. And he was not treated seriously. He was censored out. And these leaders who claim to be, you know,
I'm hearing a Green Party position paper here. Do I hear a question?
It's not a Green Party thing.
Well, I hear a question?
I'm amazed, you know, Mr. Nader, that here you are and you're still plugging away, and I think it's wonderful that you're still doing it. But must be something to have experienced this censorship.
Yeah, I think what he's referring to is really an anomaly where you have the Green Party took position after position that labor unions favor and that rank and file favor and environmental groups favor, which were ignored by Bush and Gore. So we take a stand on nuclear power and a stand on corporate welfare and cracking down on corporate crime and WTO and so on. And yet they all went with Gore. And this is really the extraordinary situation. And the same with the New York Times editorial page. I mean, we are on the same page with them on issue after issue, year after year. And they went with Gore. And I think they went with Gore because they believed that only one of the two could win. And they were going to go for the least of the worst. Not that they were enthusiastic. When I campaigned in Washington, D.C., a television station said I was the first presidential candidate to campaign in Anacostia, the poor areas. Ward 8 in Washington, D.C. has 65,000 people, and they don't have one single supermarket. They got to go to Maryland to buy their groceries. That whole tour was ignored by the Washington Post. I mean, I think it's extraordinary that 95% of the coverage of our campaign was on the horse race. Hmm. It was on none of our position papers that were carefully laid out and documented, and it compared in a very distinctive way with Bush and Gore, like on Social Security.
Well, with respect, though, do you think that perhaps some of those labor unions and environmental groups that endorsed Albert Gore thought that was the best way to get their position or something close to their position actually enacted, and if they backed someone else and Gore won, that he would not owe them anything?
But to me, they lost their credibility. You have no credibility when you sell out on what you believe in. You have lost it. And I hope those people are replaced who are running these organizations.
You see, they didn't ask for anything in return. That's the point. I mean, the Democrats and Gore know that they couldn't win this election without organized labor getting out to vote. They couldn't win this election without minority group turnout like African American. And yet they didn't take any of the positions that I have taken in favor of these constituencies in return. I mean, they didn't say, for example, to the labor unions, we're going to really push for law enforcement in occupational health and safety, where now it's been very, very weak. We're going to go for the repeal of Taft-Hartley Act so that tens of millions of low-paid workers can have a fighting chance to form a trade union and get a higher standard of living. We're going to oppose the death penalty, or we're going to at least do something about the criminal injustice system or the failed war on drugs. I think what the caller is saying, Neil, is that It was just a one-way street that Gore looked at these groups, labor and minorities and others in the environment, and said, you got nowhere to go because Bush is worse. Therefore, you're going to have to vote for me, and I don't have to move one position in your direction.
Go back to the phones, and Jeremiah's on the line from San Diego.
Hi, how you doing? Mr. Nader, I wanted to tell you that I represent the youth and the rank and file that you were just speaking of and leaving your platform strongly. I had a couple of succinct points that I wanted to make. The first one was, if you had gotten into the debates, what that would have done to, like, the fear of Bush or the wasted vote factor. I heard a lot of people saying, well, I would vote for Nader, but, you know, it's a wasted vote or whatever. If we could have gotten over that hump, what kind of difference that would have made in the total of the election, and what's next over the next 4 years of tyranny in the next presidency?
Well, I think if I had gotten on the debates, I would have demonstrated the similarities between Bush and Gore rather than the way they try to magnify their small differences. I would have shown in one area after another, some of which I've just mentioned, I won't go through, how in one area after another that deals with the structure of concentration of power that is adverse to the rights of voters, the corruption of money in campaigns, the rights of consumers, HMOs, and universal health insurance being neglected by both of them, the rights of workers and labor law reform, the rights of taxpayers. Both of the candidates are gung-ho for a bloated military budget 10 years after the demise of the Soviet Union, and for huge corporate welfare disbursements. And I think if the public saw that the similarities were so much more important than the dwindling real differences, quite apart from whether there were a fight for these differences between Bush and Gore, I think it would have turned it into a three-way race.
Where would you have drawn the line on those allowed to participate in the debates? Would Pat Buchanan have been there, the libertarians, the socialist workers?
There are several ways. One is you could go by the polls that wanted me and Buchanan, poll after poll, a majority. You could go by the record of the candidates, a demonstrated record, or is it just someone who comes out of nowhere with a platform that hasn't achieved anything? You could have different kinds of criteria, but my point is you can have more than three debates. You could mix them up, you see? Why do we ration debates in the most important election in our country? We certainly don't ration entertainment on the same media, do we?
Some people would have had some questions about the entertainment value, but in any case, thanks, Jeremiah.
Thank you.
Let's go now to...
I didn't mention what's next. And basically, it's party. See, I don't think anything's going to happen, regardless of whether Gore and Bush are going to are in the White House. Uh-huh. There's going to be deadlock. Things are so evenly divided. I don't think there'll be any major changes in direction either way in the next 4 years. And that's another 4 years of paralysis and ignoring serious systemic problems in our country, like poverty, like the environment.
Tim is on the line from Seattle.
Thank you, Neil. I've got a question for Mr. Nader. He's claimed not to have responsibility for throwing the vote towards Bush, which in many ways makes him just like all the other politicians who don't want to claim responsibility for their actions. It's true that the number of votes that went for him is, in the overall scheme of things, inconsequential, but as this election has shown, with a 300-vote margin in one state, the inconsequential has become very important. That is an anomaly of this election. And I think that in all it's going to tell the liberals is they're going to either have to have an overwhelming majority, or they're going to have to realize that with a split vote that the Republicans will always win. And quite frankly, if I was a Republican, I would make it my policy to make sure that you're well-funded for all the elections, because it seems to me if they can do that, they can stay in office for as long as...
But Tim, remember, it's not the responsibility of a candidate running for president to help elect an opponent. We all have to earn our votes. I didn't run for president and get all the people who supported us and all the volunteers and run on a basis of trying to strengthen our democracy in order to turn around and try to help Gore win his election. Only Gore could have defeated Gore. That was stated by many political commentators, and he did a pretty good job of that. Regardless of how it comes out, it was far closer than it should have been. Gore should have landslided on his own, the Texas governor.
I agree that he should have landslided him with all the facts being known.
Yeah.
And I also agree that you should have been allowed in the debates, if only that in at least one of the debates, if people could have seen your positions, they would have realized that they are so far to the extreme that the American people aren't going to vote for them.
I think they're very traditional. I think the American people don't like their taxes going to corporate subsidies, handouts, and giveaways. They don't like corruption of money by both parties of our elections and hijacking our government, as John McCain said, to the highest bidder. I don't think they like systemic ripoffs by banks and insurance companies of ghetto areas and consumers. I don't think they like 47 million workers, certainly they don't, not making a living wage, even though working hard full time. I mean, there's a lot. I think we represent traditional values. I think the extremism is on the corporation side, who pillage and plunder and toxify our environment and who corrupt our politics and who commercialize childhood itself. These are the real extremists. I'm surprised that you're on that other side of the spectrum.
Well, I'm actually not on the other side of the spectrum, Mr. Nader, and while I respect some of the positions you have and even agree with some of them, I realize that I voted for John Anderson 20 years ago and now realize that there's no way that a third party can win in our system. Now, I'd like to see a change. They have a Green Party, for say, in Germany, and they can get proportional voting. And the Green Party there has done much the same mistake that you have. They have very good positions on the environment, on nuclear, and then they come up with some statement like, oh, and by the way, this whole Cold War thing is just silly, so when we get in power, we will give the NATO plans to the Russians, and the Germans go, okay, sorry. And what that does, that bothers me because I'm an environmentalist, that damages your good points, which you have a whole lot of them. But a legacy is everything, sir, not just the best thing you did.
Well,
and unfortunately, part of your legacy looks like is going to be putting George W. Bush in the White House.
Well, just wait and see. First of all, John Anderson was a full supporter of ours. I think the difference between our views comes down to one simple difference. You really believe that in a winner-take-all system, a new political party should not mess up the likelihood of one or the other, the major candidates, to win. And if you say that, I disagree with you. I don't think the political system can be regenerated from within anymore. The two parties, they've had their chance every 4 years, and they seem to be getting more corrupt and more indifferent to the people's needs and more subservient to corporate power. But if what you're saying is that we're stuck with a system that doesn't have proportional representation, it's a winner-take-all, so third parties don't clutter the field, then at least I know where you're coming from.
Oh, but that's mainly, I just want to point out, I am not against third parties, or extra parties, I don't know why it has to be third parties.
Right.
And I think you should work for proportional representation. But the way you have to do it is to work within the system rather than attacking the party that most represents your part of the system, and that's what I'm afraid you did in this case.
Well, the system is very exclusionary. If you worked in Washington in the citizen groups, you would realize how citizen groups have been shut out from participation here because there are dollar signs all over Congress and the White House.
Well, that's true, sir. But
and when that happens, you've got to go into the political arena and try to do what third parties have done, either push the agenda on the part of one of the two parties, the way the anti-slavery party did, or the women's right to vote, or the pro-trade union labor party, or the farmer populist party. You either got to do that, or you got to move to try to replace them over three or four cycles.
Well, how many cycles is it going to take before the Republicans are finally out?
Well, that's up to the Democrats, isn't it? If the Democrats took away our issues and bid for that progressive vote and really went to the half of the people who don't even vote, there wouldn't be a Green Party challenge, would there?
Well, no, you want your positions and only your positions, and I think Bill Clinton's genius was showing that politics does come from the middle, and it's better to try to get in power and try to bring the middle more to your direction.
There's nothing being in the middle, surrendering to corporate extremists, as I just defined it.
Tim, I have to cut you off there because I have to say you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Thanks, Tim, for your call. And let's go now to Adam, who's on the line from Seattle.
Hi. Actually, you've already addressed the first question I was going to ask you, which is whether you think that building a party top-down or bottom-up is better. So I'll go to my second question, which is that given the positive publicity that you got when you weren't even allowed to sit in the audience of the first debate, why did you not try to get into, as an audience member, the second two debates, either to get the extra publicity for being kicked out of those two, or to maybe even get in and in the last debate being able to ask a question as an audience member?
Well, I was kept from being in an adjoining auditorium watching the debate in Boston on closed circuit TV. It was even worse. Even though I had a ticket and I was invited by Fox News, it had a trailer on the premises to be interviewed after the conclusion of the debate. In terms of commentary. So I was not trying to crash into an auditorium that I didn't have a permit to go into. I had a permit to go into the adjoining auditorium, and the same in Washington University in St. Louis, where I was excluded from being interviewed by the on-campus student television station, even though I had a legitimate pass to go on the campus. Now, I filed a lawsuit against the debate commission in Boston. I much prefer to be a plaintiff than a defendant. And I think the depositions are going to show some very serious and unsavory maneuvers by this Democrat and Republican-controlled company called the Debate Commission. And I hope that in 4 years, its monopoly will be broken. We'll have far more multi-candidate debates all over the country and a very robust American political tradition of the 19th century.
Great. Can I ask one more quick question?
Quickly.
What do you think is the most effective way for people to bring about campaign reforms, both in the realms of campaign finance and the reform of institutionalized two-party dominance?
I think by supporting a third party that basically affects the margin on the first round and forces one party to either follow up on its promises, like the Democratic Party doesn't follow up on its promises of campaign finance reform as it furiously bids for the same tens of millions of dollars that the Republicans bid for from the same business interests. And second, very strong congressional district organization. If you had 500 people in each congressional district, in a very tight campaign finance reform club spread throughout the district, it could really be decisive. There's nothing that can substitute for citizen organization determined, informed at the local level, putting the heat on members of Congress.
Thanks for the call. Quick question from Jason on email. He writes, Mr. Nader, thanks for running and talking about many of the issues the main parties wouldn't touch. Running for president seems like a huge step, especially with limited funds. Why not run for a House or Senate seat?
Well, because I was interested in building a new party, and the best position to build a new party, working with local and state Green Party candidates, is at the national level. You know, it's hard enough for any congressional candidate to get any media to communicate to larger audiences in our country what our platform is, what our commitment is, that we share the concerns of tens of millions of people on one subject matter after another that are ignored by Bush and Gore. And the presidential vantage point in terms of unifying this growing reform movement has no peer.
But does that mean next time, 2 years from now, you wouldn't run for a Senate seat?
No, I'm very much interested in party building. I want more people to run for Senate seats, House seats, local city council, state legislatures.
We're talking with Ralph Nader. You can get in on our conversation by going online at npr.org or giving us a call, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. I'm Neil Conan, and it is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Support for National Public Radio comes from this and other National Public Radio stations. Contributors also include the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, Edith and Henry Everett, supporting Facing History and Ourselves, promoting a more informed and humane citizenry for 25 years, 800-856-9039. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, making grants to improve health and health care for all Americans. This is NPR National Public Radio.
From West Side Story to Phantom of the Opera, producer and director Hal Prince shaped the course of modern musical theater.
Hal helped push musicals towards a more sophisticated and darker point of view.
Prince's latest production is three new one-act operas. We'll sample them later today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Thank you.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We're speaking today with Green Party presidential candidate Ralph Nader. To join the conversation, call us at 800-989-TALK or send us an email. Our address is totn@npr.org. Tom joins us now on the line from Philadelphia.
Yeah, gentlemen, real pleasure. Mr. Nader, I want to make a comment on your comment about Al Gore can't take Tennessee. We've heard this much in the media. A little deeper analysis would maybe explain that. Since the state of the economy has been so good, so strong, record low unemployment, record expansion, record financial markets to help finance the economic growth, the people in Tennessee were probably so happy. They were concerned about single issues, non-gun control, pro-life, the $600,000 exemption that Bush promised that he would enact. So they became probably more focused on single issues that pertained to them directly since the general state of things was so good. Now, you remember Lyndon Johnson in Texas. When he was representing Texas, he had a specific interest there that he represented, and people were amazed that when he represented the national interest, he turned his positions 180 degrees, e.g. civil rights. So, Mr. Nader, I'll tell you, it's really unfortunate that a person with your great record, the great contribution you've made in the last 25 years, that you've undermined your credibility by throwing such a monkey wrench into this process. When you talk about third parties, and you may compare it to other countries, you fail to mention that other countries have runoffs if they have multiple parties, okay? So for the life of
some do and some don't.
Well, some do and some don't, right. But there wasn't that possibility here at all, so you really throw a monkey wrench into it. And you're throwing the Democratic Party back into the McGovern, Dukakis, Mondale days, and maybe you ought to form incorporate them into your party. For the life of me, I can't understand how someone with your intelligence and the great legacy that you've had up to this point, and I think that's going to be undermined because you kind of obtained a unique position where both Democrats, Republicans, and all others in the country kind of respected the work that you did. And it's very unfortunate that I think in this instance, what you've done here in this election, and the caller, a few callers back is right, there's going to be an asterisk there. And I don't really think it's going to accrue well to your record.
Well, let me respond to your two points. One is the same factors you talked about in Tennessee prevailed in your state of Pennsylvania. And Gore, as I recall, took Pennsylvania. And there are other states that Gore took that had those same factors that you mentioned. The second is, I think if you ask one out of every three American workers whether they're happy with the economy, they're making $5.5, $6, $7, $8, $9 an hour before deducting the costs of going to work, commuting costs, daycare costs. That's not a living wage. I don't think you'd find them very happy with the economy. A huge amount of child poverty in our country. The majority of the workers, according to the Department of Labor, are making less today in real dollars than it was made in 1973, even though the economy is much bigger, and of course the rich are getting richer. As far as the third party, I wish that people who would criticize this third party effort would really come down to the nub of their criticism, which is, how dare any third party mess up the party of the two large parties? How dare you tip a balance as you try to grow, like an acorn grows, not overnight, into an oak tree? How dare you tip the balance in favor of one major party or another? And you ought to come out and say that, right, clearly, that basically you should not run, and you should every 4 years get on your knees and ask the two parties, can we run now? Is now the time? Can we run now? Whatever happened to competition? Whatever happened to new energy sources? Where would this country be without third parties? It was the party of Norman Thomas that gave Social Security and unemployment compensation proposals to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He admitted that as he enacted those two great reforms. So come out and say it, that you really don't think people have a right to build a new party because it's going to mess up the balance on the first round or the second round between the two major parties. Then at least we'll understand where you're coming from.
Well, I think most people know that what the effect has been of your candidacy on this election, and no one would have dreamed that, as the previous caller said, you, in the scheme of the whole election, your votes are rather inconsequential. But in this tight razor edge contest in Florida, it really has been critical. You took 100,000 votes away down there, and very few people would doubt probably a good percentage of them would have gone to Mr. Gore. Now, what you talk about in Pennsylvania or the country, 20 million people now more are working than were in the beginning of the Gore-Clinton administration. And most of the issues that you represent have a much better chance of getting rectified in a Gore candidacy than they ever would in a Bush candidacy, which, well, as you know, has one of the worst environmental records, or dead 50 last in Texas.
Well, you may not be
calling. I assume he meant Bush administration,
yes,
or
yeah.
Gore administration.
Yeah, you caller, Tom, you may not realize that for the last 20 years, all those citizen groups, many of whom you may agree with, the environmental and civil liberties, civil rights, and are being shut out of Washington. The civil society is being crowded right out of Washington. And by both parties that are increasingly morphing into one party, which is the corporate cash party. And when you can't get anything done as a citizen group, you don't have a chance to have a chance. Everything are dollar signs when you go up on Capitol Hill. You've got to go into the political arena. And keep in mind that 20 years of rejection of the progressive agenda in this country, labor, minorities, environment, consumer protection, trade, etc. 20 years of rejection must invite a response. And you may be interested to know that according to the CNN exit polls in Florida, George W. Bush took 10 times more Democratic voters away from Gore than I did. So you want to blame George W. Bush?
I agree that you have a lot of great points, and I just wished you would have used your voice and your force and more effectively than you've used it, and I think you've undermined it. I have to give you a triple F.
But I want to ask you, are you willing to blame George W. Bush more for the problem in Florida that Gore is now confronting because he took 10 times more Democratic votes than I did from Al Gore?
Could you say that again, please?
George W. Bush, according to the CNN exit polls, took 10 times the number of Democratic voters to his side in the election on November 7th than I took away in Florida on November 7th. From Al Gore.
Well, I'd have to look at the counties to determine that.
But let's say that was accurate. Would you then blame George W. Bush?
There's 20,000 votes that aren't even being counted. There's another 6,000 votes of absentee ballots where they fraudulently put numbers on. Those Bush ballots were invalid.
Tom,
I'm not hearing much about it.
Tom, I think those are other issues that we've dealt with in other shows. So I'm going to have to stop you there. Thanks, though, for calling. To get to the point, though, that a lot of people, I assume your principles aren't going to change on this, no matter how many phone calls you get. But if it is true that George W. Bush is elected, would you have at least a twinge the day if it should happen that drilling starts in the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge?
We're going to stop him from doing that. The Democrats will stiffen their resolve in Congress when there's a Republican in the White House. If George Bush was reelected in 92, the consensus in this town among political operatives is there wouldn't have been a NAFTA, there wouldn't have been a WTO GATT, and there wouldn't have been phony welfare reform. So, you know, you have to look, the groups who are supporting Gore, even though they're closer to our stands on the issues, on the least worst principle, they're supporting Gore, really minimize their own power. They don't understand that just because George W. Bush has a position at election time, a man who likes to avoid controversy, a man who's not all that knowledgeable or energetic, is going to prevail. I'm saying that the progressive constituents in this country, labor, minorities, can flex their muscles and block it and stop settling for least worst on the next round.
To some degree in this race, there was a internal contest for third party, if you will, between the Green Party and the Reform Party. You could have won a lot of money, I suspect, at the beginning of this race by betting that Ralph Nader would get a lot more votes than Pat Buchanan. But after Ross Perot got 19% his first try and then 8% the second time around, the Reform Party now has to be considered a pretty much of a cinder. As you looked at it, what did you think happened there?
I think it split apart with factions, tremendous faction. It didn't have a unified political agenda. I think the Green Party does. And when their leader abandoned them, it sort of pulled the money out from under them. So they didn't have any money. They were divided.
Well, they had the $12.5 million federal funding.
Yeah, after mm-hmm. You know, Buchanan qualified. But, I mean, in the fractious previous months. Mm-hmm. They just tore each other apart. I mean, there were such bitter personality fights and wrangles. And unfortunately, that's what happens when you don't have a unified agenda, so they can focus on the agenda and not on squabbles.
4 years ago, you ran as the Green Party candidate for president and did not campaign very much, I think that's fair to say. What made it different this time around?
4 years ago, we threw up flares to the Democratic Party, basically saying, look what's coming if you don't go back to your historical roots. If you are not the party of Magnuson and Nelson and Ribicoff and Mondale and the Senate and Abe Rosenthal and John Moss and others, and they didn't listen. And they started crowding out the citizen groups even more, pushing them out. These are the groups whose constituencies support the Democratic Party. And so this time we ran more vigorously.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Back to the phones. Marcus joins us from Eugene, Oregon.
Thank you very much. Before my question, I'd just like to say briefly, if Tim and the previous caller think that they can, quote, work within the system, unquote, a system of what I believe to be corrupt Republican politics, then they should quit trying to engage in scapegoat politics against Ralph Nader and go ahead and work within that system and try to see if they can make any changes. I'm black and male, and I didn't vote for Gore, and I certainly wouldn't have voted for Bush. It's the very Clinton-Gore criminal injustice system and the racist war on drugs that have put so many of the same blacks and minorities in jails and prison that could have come out and voted for Gore in the first place had not blacks been so many blacks had been shunted there. My question for Ralph Nader is, what are we going to do about so many weak-kneed, scared and browbeat liberals and progressives when the Democrat Party can trot out all these other people who are supposed to be progressives, like Jesse Jackson, who agreed with your exclusion from the debates, and Gloria Steinem, and always scare a certain fraction of so-called liberals and progressives from really having the courage and the willingness to sacrifice to work toward real change by having a third progressive party?
Well, I think if the Green Party puts enough pressure on the Democratic Party, then the progressives will get more influential within the Democratic Party. Senator Kennedy told a friend almost 3 weeks ago in New York that if Gore wins the presidency, his wing of the Democratic Party, Kennedy's, the progressive wing, will become more influential. I think because Al Gore and Joe Lieberman had to send out the progressive wing of their party to try to rescue them in the last 2 weeks and undermine our campaign and take away our votes, that these progressive Democrats are going to have some quid pro quo. They're going to get their calls more likely to be returned from the Democratic Leadership Council domination of the Democratic Party. I think the caller needs the following examples to illustrate his key point. In New York State, Neil, there are 27,000 nonviolent drug offenders in jail. And even though there are more white drug offenders, nonviolent, because the whites are a bigger population, 94% of those 27,000 nonviolent drug offenders are people of color. And you take two adolescents, clean records, one white, one black, they commit the same crime, six times the likelihood of the black teenager going to jail. I mean, these are not statistically insignificant. There is a tremendous bias in the criminal justice system, the way it is enforced selectively and discriminatorily. And, of course, that's true for the death penalty as well.
And the people, we just have a few seconds left. I just feel required to point out that the people organizationally most concerned about that were all endorsing Al Gore.
That's right, because, first of all, they're part of the party. They're part of the privileges of the party. And they think that, bad as Al Gore is, and believe me, they don't are very enthusiastic that George Bush was worse. People who want more details, our website is votenader.com.
And thank you, Ralph Nader, for coming in to join us today. We do appreciate
thank you, Neil.
It. And I hope you've gotten some sleep in the last week or so.
I appreciate the program.
Talk of the Nation is directed by Devin Robbins and produced by Susan Lund, Cece Madope Fadope, Setsuko Sato, Justine Kennan, Rena Okada, and Robert Sachs. Our interns are Bobby Carter and Damon Lazara. We had help this week from technical directors Mark Greenhouse, Sean Fox, Andrea Jackson-Gewirtz, Dennis Nielsen, Sue Klein, Helen Quinn, and Neil Tivolt in Washington, and Chris Sackis in New York. Reference librarians are Caleb Giacini, Kimaleski, Bob Robinson, and Alphonse Veen. Greg Allen is our executive producer. Senior producer Ellen Silva in Washington. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.